The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, we did hand out grades for the Atlanta Falcons receivers in our last segment, our last block, or hour, I should say, of the show. Now it's time to shift our attention to quarterbacks, although I did want to give you guys a chance to touch on Ray McLeod because we did not get to him in the receiver.
Yeah, I'm glad. I was about to say, hey, can I talk about Ray?
I was thinking the same thing. He deserves to be talked about.
Not only is he the most unique dress player on the team. Have you seen the Ray
stuff? Best fashion sense.
Yes, and he produces music. Like, he's all the things.
I don't want to butcher too much, but like, he goes like this, comes from some type of thrift type, Goodwill type store in like New York or something, and gets his stuff and puts it together. He's always uniquely dressed. It's always great. Like, when we're on the road, I'll be sitting in the mill room and I'll be like, I'm always waiting to see when Ray comes in and what he's wearing.
What he's gonna wear.
But look, essentially, you had three receivers on this team have career years, all right? And you had essentially four offensive players have career years. Now, I know Darnell didn't reach 1,000 yards, but he was close. We talked about Drake did and had 100 catches. Ray McLeod had 62 catches for 686 yards. And to put in context what that means for him, this guy never caught more than 39 passes in a year and never had more than 277 yards receiving in a season. And he went for 62 for right under 700 yards. I mean, he was everything and more, and he wasn't even the guy that people talked about when they talked about the third receiver before the season. In the offseason moves, it was all about Rondale Moore.
Yeah.
Imagine if we had Rondale Moore. I mean, I hate what happened to Rondale in training camp, but Ray was that dude. And he was that dude from day one in camp.
He really was. And it was not to me. And I think you look at a guy like Ray, smaller build, more compact. I was excited about seeing him in the tight red area and things like that. But it ended up being more about the contested catches, did it not? Like the catches across the middle where he's getting hit in the ribs by the safety or really getting mauled on the outside. I thought he was exceptional. He and I brought this name up a minute ago, but he reminded me a lot build wise of like an Eric Weems type receiver that was willing to do a lot of the dirty work, put in motion, try to block a linebacker, if you will. He was that guy, and he had that grit. And so I think it's worth mentioning, and it kind of falls in line with exactly what we said about Darnell Mooney and Drake London, because I don't think there's any mistake in it. To me, Bijan was going to be Bijan. I don't want to take away from that, and we'll obviously grade him later down the road. But this wide receiver core, 1, 2, and 3, was the difference between this team being, average, 8 and 9, whatever you want to call it, middle of the league, 15th draft pick, and being terrible. Like that this group that we just talked about was the difference in all of that to me. And so Ray's up there, man. I give him an A on the year. I'm sure there's a couple plays that he'd probably like to have back, and that's the reason you don't get an A+. For all three of those guys. But, man, for the role he was put in, he was exceptional. Like, I love watching the guy go to work, and you're right. He's got a little of that swag to him.
Moving to quarterbacks now, let's start with Kirk Cousins because that is how the Falcons started the season. He finished this year with just over 3,500 passing yards, 18 touchdowns. Should I say this one?
Say it, Tiff.
You're going to have to say it.
16.
If you don't, I will.
Interceptions this season. Yeah.
And I think he had 12 fumbles. They didn't lose all of them. I think that was the number. I'm guessing off the top
of
my head.
6-3
They were 7-7 with him, right?
Right.
Yeah, 7-7.
I don't do numbers.
Because Michael Penix was 1-0. In regulation,
there we go.
0-2 in overtime.
Yeah, there you go.
Which
he didn't touch the ball.
Yes. Said 1-0
did not, the ball in overtime.
Yes. Did not touch the ball.
Which is not his fault.
I don't. This one is hard because this is literally the tale of two seasons. The 6-3, NFC Offensive Player of the Week, not once, but twice, threw for almost 900 yards or something like 900 yards against Tampa Bay. Those were the games that seemingly at the time were for the division, were the biggest games, the most meaningful, impactful games of your postseason hopes, and he was a baller in those games. And then you had the other ones, and you know, he was leading the league in interceptions when he left. I think he might have led the league in interceptions at the position. Would it be a coward's grade if I said this grade was inconclusive?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. Huh? I don't know how you can get away with that. How is it inconclusive? We might never see him play another game.
I will say this. For $90 million in 14 games, I give him a failing grade. And I hate to say that, but I don't know what else to say because he went so far one way after. The drop-off is unbelievable and something like I've never seen in a season. But he also brought the off the field stuff to this team, and I think he helped some guys mature in some ways. But I just don't know how I give him anything other than maybe a D.
A D minus.
It's just hard for me because he was so good and then so bad. but when he got benched, he didn't waver as far as the leadership from what I saw from my behind-the-scenes stuff being around the team. And I don't give out behind-the-scenes stuff because that stays there. But I didn't see anything change about that human being that Kirk Cousins was after the fact of him being benched.
Yeah, and I think he deserves credit for that. And I think if you're giving off-field grades, I think obviously it's usually an A-plus for Kirk Cousins. I mean, he's been a class act throughout. But I'm with you. I don't know how you give him anything other than a D. And I think it would be an F if not for all the highs. I mean, we're talking about a guy. It's going to be funny, guys. It's going to be funny, you know, 4 years from now when Michael Penix throws for 520 in a game and we're like, he just broke the record for most passing yards in a Falcons game from Kirk Cousins. You remember that 14-game stretch from Kirk Cousins where he was lighting it up for the first seven games? The bottom line is, you're right, he fell off. The first hint at it was when they played New Orleans, back there in early November. And then you go on the road to Denver, you completely fall flat on your face, and you're thinking, okay, team's tired, got to go to bye week. They somehow came out of the bye week playing terribly offensively. They changed a lot defensively, but you come out of the bye week and you play the Chargers, and he goes for four picks. And you're scratching your head going, what just happened? How did we come out of the bye week being worse off offensively? And I felt like at the time that Kirk had watched something on tape, had decided he needed to make a change about getting the ball out or not letting pressure get to him or whatever it may be. And all of a sudden, he got happy feet. He wasn't setting his feet. He wasn't driving the ball. He wasn't understanding what the defense was trying to do to him. And I said this yesterday because I'm going to continue to go down this road. I don't think it's all on Kirk Cousins. I think Zach Robinson did not have answers for what the defenses were trying to do to Kirk Cousins. And I think that had he had more answers or maybe a little bit longer tenure as a play caller, maybe he could have worked around some of those things. But he didn't. And he didn't have that background. And Kirk Cousins continued to fall flat. So I'm in the D range with you. There were some really high highs, but some really bad lows.
But is it fair to say that the limitations that Kirk Cousins brings was like that hurt your answers too? Because if you have a guy that's a little bit more mobile, I hate being like this, but mobile at all. Sure. You can move the pocket, you can kind of do things, you can run some plays that maybe will naturally create stuff to help build confidence, but it didn't feel like there was any way to do any of that with it felt like it was so limited because you saw immediately the pocket moves with Penix. Immediately,
not first play,
not to, and not to me. Look, some of the I was talking to somebody that around the league and played in the league for some years, and I was talking to them about when we had a caller call in and said, "Hey, Michael Penix hasn't put the ball in harm's way," and I completely disagree with that. I think Michael Penix puts the ball in harm's way a lot. However, the fact of the matter is he can, because his arm strength, that talent, he, not to mention the guy's walking around with, like, I mean, you might need a dump truck to hold him right now, his testicular fortitude with the throws that he has the brass to make. But he does it because, say it again, Tiff, arm strength.
Arm strength.
Yeah.
And so he can do things that you don't have to – your scheming breaks down. You can just call plays again and stuff that you like in your book, and it gets – because Kirk had no – he couldn't throw the ball. He had no zip. It was – everything just went bye-bye.
Yeah, and I agree with that to an extent, dude. But, like, even some of Michael Penix's play action stuff are, like, half rolls. And he ain't moving that far. I think it – and look, a lot of play action passes in the NFL, and I don't want to continue to beat this drum, they involve pulling guards and finding an extra blocker backside or front side on the play action stuff. That allows you to get a running back out in a route. It allows you to get a check down. We don't have any of that stuff. None of that stuff is built into this offense. And I'm not saying that's bad or good. I'm just saying that with the way this offense was built, when Kirk went downhill, we had no answers. Like, it wasn't, well, let's run this. Let's run a draw more. You tried. You sprinkled it in. I saw, and I can count them on one hand, I saw one draw action this year. I think I saw two wham plays this year, and the running back screens in the middle of the field, I think I saw one of this year. So those things all usually come about when you have an immobile quarterback, and that's what Kirk Cousins was. So, I he's going to get a D from me. There were A-plus moments. There were F-minus-minus moments. But the totality of it, and unfortunately, to your point, is just a fact of the story. When you talk about the finances attached and what the expectations were in that role, that we thought we had 2 years of a upside plus side starting caliber quarterback in the NFL, and you fall short. There's a lot of different ways we're going to look at Terry Fontenot and break down the Michael Penix pick and the Kirk Cousins signing. But the fact of the matter is, thank goodness you had Michael Penix back there in the bank. Because if not, you're looking at a situation where we're going to question ourselves in week 15, that are we going to start Taylor Heinicke? Was that going to be the conversation?
The funny thing is that if, you know, Terry has his press conference tomorrow, if Terry Fontenot's here making moves in the 2025 free agency class and the draft, it's the Michael Penix pick. That alone will save him at least for another year, because if you just have – all these moves and Kirk Cousins, and you have your fourth straight year of losing, you don't have a job.
I would argue Bijan's in that category too.
Can you fault them for wanting to win now? That's why you went to go get Kirk Cousins. Like,
no.
There was a plan, and so it just didn't end up working. It worked out at the beginning. It just didn't end up working out the rest of the season.
I don't fault them at all. However, it's mismanagement to spend that much money on one player and not get it right. After 3 years of we're building to winning.
If you're in win now mode, then fine. Go draft Jared Verse, who's the defensive rookie of the year.
Yeah, but it turns out it wouldn't have got you much.
You signed to Kirk Cousins. That's if you're in win now mode, that's how I'm seeing
it.
So I don't know. It's hindsight, but it is what it is.
You can do the hindsight thing all you want. I just think two things. I think Michael Penix saved his job because Kirk Cousins almost lost it for him.